Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and listen to the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. That's in the Black Belt. That's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and listen to the live stream there also, or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app in that TuneIn search engine. Just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the auxiliary connection. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, it's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. facebook.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content posted daily. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button for me. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is out there. Changes are being made. In fact, we're down the home stretch now. The changes being made to Time for an Awakening. .com, the addition of the new programs, spots for their podcasts, and there's still more information and other podcasts of other programs, including Time for an Awakening, that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com, timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're happy to have our special guest join us, former congresswoman and human rights activist, Dr. Cynthia McKinney, is scheduled to join us, and hopefully she's with us. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, considering.
Yeah.
I don't want to go into my rant about, I don't know if everyone know around the country, around the globe, that Philadelphia, the whole Northeast section got and they called it a blizzard or some blast or some kind of phenomenon where a whole cold front came through. And Brother Man had to suit up.
Yeah, well, you wasn't the only one this time.
I couldn't hide out.
I have to agree with you, Richard. That I think it was 6 today. That those temperatures is, I can deal with the 40s and 30s, but when you get down this low,
and they was trying, you know, you listening to the news, they was trying to make it like it was a football game because they, Brother Ramon called it. It said it's the bomb cycle storm, but they was trying to say, well, back in 18, you know, we had a -4, degrees, and that's what it got down. And it got down to 0 in Philadelphia for the next, and it's supposed to this morning. I mean, going into the mornings, this blast is supposed to keep the temperature down, but then it's going to get back to at least what I consider reasonable for an African who's still got that melanated gene that says you need to be in a warm climate. It's going to get back to at least a reasonable, like you said, 40. At least I can live with that.
Yeah, well, we're supposed to get a little relief later on in the week, so we'll see what happens. I think we have Dr. McKinney on the line with us. Before we bring her in, Richard, with some announcements going on in the city here, upcoming months.
You know, this here, 2018, is the celebration of some honorable people in African American history. Frederick Douglass was born in 1818, so his 200th birthday is being honored through this year of 2018. And W.E.B. Du Bois, they're having in Philadelphia, they're having for his 150th. Birthday, which he was born in 1868, they're having a full year long of symposiums and book discussions that are starting this month at the in Philadelphia, the famous Church of the Advocate church. And so it's that'll be going on. They're celebrating him in this year. So those two individuals are being celebrated, and then the 50th year of the the American Historical Association, African American Historical Association, is from 1968 is being celebrated also, which is Carter G. Woodson's group.
Yeah, well, it should be interesting. We'll probably have Tony Montero come on, University of Penn Professor Dr. Tony Montero, come on to talk about, because I know he's going to be heavily involved in some of the things dealing with WEB.
Yes, he definitely is.
Yeah, we'll get him, schedule him on to kind of talk about some things. Tonight, we're happy to have back with us, and she's been on the program several times before, but she's busy, even though she's out of Congress. She's still been working on the human rights front, dealing with issues that affect people around the world, and black people in the diaspora in particular, activists, human rights activists, and former Congresswoman Dr. Cynthia McKinney is joining us. Let's see if we can pull her up. Dr. McKinney. Dr. McKinney, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yes, I am.
How are you? How are you?
It's morning for me, so I say good morning. The sun is coming up. But I know it's just evening there for you.
I'm happy to have you.
So thank you very much for inviting me to be on the show.
I'm happy to have you back with us, myself and Brother Richard.
And any temporary lapses of coherence is because it's so early in the morning.
No problem. Where are you at, Dr. McKinney?
Huh?
I said, where are you?
I'm in Bangladesh.
Okay.
Oh, the real place. Okay.
Dr. McKinney, we want to cover several issues with you from your experiences in Congress to your dealings on the human rights front. And we're going to be bouncing back and forth, myself and Brother Richard, to have a lot of different things, and then we'll get the listening audience involved. But Dr. McKinney, first I want to talk to you about the issue that's happening currently in Libya. You were there. Yourself, Dr. Fauntleroy, and others, a contingent of African Americans that had went there before things fell apart and before Gaddafi was murdered. Talk about things from your perspective. What is going on? What happened during the time before things fell apart? Because it's a lot of things that has leaked out. Since Gaddafi was murdered, about him and his sons trying to reach some type of agreement with the United States to find out if they could have a negotiated settlement. Things had supposedly been negotiated when Libya reached an agreement on that the hijackers, the Lockerbie Scotland, and they paid families, I guess you considered reparations. For that Lockerbie bombing, I think they supposedly had held harbored some of the hijackers.
That was admitted by the CIA.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That Libya didn't have anything to do with. So, and that was one of the sources of contention.
Okay.
In addition to the framing around Lockerbie, there was the issue of the Libyan government, which is the Jamahiriya, wanting more money from the oil companies that were extracting the oil. And and it is the right of any country to demand the foreigners that are coming in and extracting the resources that they get paid a fair price. And that fair price is determined by the seller, not the buyer. And that was another point of contention. A third point of contention was that the Europeans wanted to, as they already have successfully done, split Africa. And there was this effort to create a Mediterranean, sort of a trade group of the Mediterranean. And the Libya's position was that that's fine, but you take all of Africa, you don't just take North Africa. And so Libya was maintaining a hard line in its relations with the Europeans and the West, and the, in particular, Western corporations, U.S. corporations. That was problematic. I think probably more problematic was the example that Libya was setting. So I use the Green Book as a teaching instrument here I teach undergraduates political science. I also teach graduate students, MBA students in the business school, but that's completely different. And it's, you know, I don't get a chance to inject the political side in those conversations as much as I would like. But in the political science department, I have more latitude to delve into just exactly what was the threat. And the threat of Libya, that Libya posed, I believe, was the framework and the philosophy on which the Jamahiriya was built. And so when I say Jamahiriya, what exactly am I talking about? I'm talking about the political system that had been employed by the people of Russia, by the people of Libya, like I said, it's early in the morning here. And it was a revolutionary, based on revolutionary committees. So the structure of the government was like you have any other government that has functions of governance. But the philosophy underlying these various branches of the government was different. And I think the clearest example of direct democracy. So what I teach my students is that there's two forms of democratic governance. There's direct democracy and then there's indirect democracy. What we have been sold on, and I mean globally, what humanity has been sold on is indirect democracy, where we take our sovereignty as individuals and we hand it over to another set of individuals who then we have to go to and ask them to serve us. Now, no one in their right mind would think that that was a perfect form of government when we as individuals are sovereign anyway. So, but anyway, that's what we've been, you know, sort of sold on, and the United States enforces the indirect democracy model around the world, quite frankly, because indirect democracies, which are republics, like the United States is a republic, and most of the governments that are member states of the United Nations are republics. And so these republics tend toward what we are experiencing now. And this is a global phenomenon, and that is called kakistocracy, where you literally get the worst people, the most unprepared people, the most unscrupulous people, the biggest, I guess they're the best lying people. Those are the ones who succeed. And that's what we're seeing around the world, that these Republican form of governance basically leads to an extreme state of dissatisfaction because of the low quality of the leadership. And I guess I don't know why it is that we tolerate it. I don't tolerate it, you know, and that's the source of my outrage. But the vast majority of people tolerate it and they're happy with it. And I would just give an example of President Obama. Now, we're talking about Libya, but Libya happened under President Obama. I just posted a thing on my Facebook page, which is Cynthia McKinney Official. And I was speaking to a professor who lost his job because he came to the rescue of black students who were being disproportionately punished by the University of Ottawa. And it's a very long story, but in the end, he ended up losing his job, and the university sued him, and the university won $1 million judgment again. I mean, it just all because he took a stand and sided with the black students. Well, this professor has become an activist, of course, because maybe he always was an activist at heart, and that's what got him into this predicament that he is in now. Well, anyway, he posted on his Facebook page, he drew my attention to, at the close of the year, he posted a photo of Barack Obama shaking the hand of Muammar Gaddafi. And then his commentary was, the Nobel Peace Prize winner shook his hand, looked him in the eye, and then stabbed him in the back. Something like that, you know. So I posted it, and my commentary was, never forget and never forgive Hillary and Obama. You would be shocked, or at least, well, I'm not shocked at anything anymore. I've just about seen it all. But I guess you could say it's extremely disappointing that the hangover from the Obama Kool-Aid is still in effect. And that black people, are still defending, oh, well, he was forced to do it. Oh, he didn't have any choice. Without understanding who Barack Obama really is, why he was tapped at the moment that he was tapped, and the pernicious effect of Obama policies around the world. I'm not even going to talk about inside the U.S., the domestic policy, where Obama went along with the largest theft from black people since the slave trade, I guess, with the foreclosure situation and the theft of black people's homes. So this kind of dysfunction, this kind of political dysfunction is just extremely disconcerting to me, because I don't even know the basis on which it originates. It doesn't originate in any intellectual capacity, because the defense of what Obama did in Libya, or the saying, okay, well, it doesn't really matter. It does matter, and it's indefensible. And just say, okay, it does matter and it's indefensible, but I still like him. Say that. Acknowledge the wrong that was done, not just to the people of Libya. This is a wrong that was done to us. I was in the meeting when the leaders of the Jamahiriya, including Gaddafi, because Gaddafi is, I mean, you know, Libya is not just one person. When the leaders of the Jamahiriya said, if you can't live in dignity in the U.S. or in Europe, come back to Africa, come back to Libya and build Africa. I was there. And $90 billion was set aside to make that happen. And I know that the group of people that I took to Libya with me were saying, whoa, well, let's go pick out our apartment, you know. You know, people were ready to get on board. But you see, the United States, under the neoliberal regime, has become a great culling machine. At least the last time I checked, which was not, I guess maybe 7 or 8 months ago, the largest number of PhDs in the U.S. that are immigrants are Africans, actually Nigerians. And so the great intellectual capacity that is African is actually benefiting the United States, and it's not benefiting us. It's benefiting this great culling machine of U.S. corporations.
Dr. McKinney,
let me
backtrack on some of the statements you made, because I want to kind of get to the bottom, or at least get you to talk about, because if I'm not mistaken, you were there when those first bombs started falling and people had trouble getting out.
Yes, I was there.
Yeah. Now.
Yes, I was there.
Now let me go.
Yes, and we were trying to find a way to get out.
But let me go back, because the things that you're talking about, especially when you said that Libya and some of the leaders of Libya, when you said leaders, was talking about allocating billions of dollars for blacks to come back from the United States and I guess other areas of the diaspora back to the continent. See, that type of information never hits the people here. And I'm talking about the average black person here. It should hit these people because we have black leadership that is supposed to represent black people. And they're supposed to be the intermediary between information getting back to their constituents, but it doesn't. And the failure of black leadership is something that we'll talk about later on in the conversation. But talk about when the bombs started falling, you know, because when Gaddafi was killed, it was ethnic cleansing going on in several cities in Libya where blacks was wholesale before the slavery started. Blacks were being murdered. Hillary Clinton and Obama knew about it and didn't do anything about it. Talk about when the bombs started falling, exactly what was going on. And, I mean, you don't have to go in detail, but just let the listening audience know that you were there.
Yes, I was there. I was there. It was amazing that the members of the Congressional Black Caucus completely abdicated their responsibility to the diaspora. If we are a part of something, well, I remember I was the one that told on one, I didn't say who it was, member of the Congressional Black Caucus who's still in Congress, of course, with an attitude like that, you get to stay in Congress. And we'll see, if I say the state, then you'll know who it is, but he said, basically, I don't represent South Africa. I represent blah, blah, blah. And so, there's so many things. Those members of Congress are not using the letterhead and the office of Congress. They are not using it for us. Let me just be clear about that.
Go ahead. But I have to ask, based off of what you were laying the framework of the two types of democracy, Dr. McKinney, and let me say, I am curious, and I'm one of those curious people. So I'm curious in what you did your dissertation in, since you are teaching political science in Bangladesh, which is an interesting place to be now. But isn't it in a republic, even though they have the title of Congressional Black Caucus, and as you say, they are representing the republic, not the people. And the American, and I say the American nation state, it is not about it's a self-interest. It is about developing, and you know, not having Africa be a unified powerhouse, which Gaddafi was advocating and pushing for Africa to be. So it yes. makes sense. And therefore, as you said, you don't understand, and we don't understand why African Americans, regardless who they give us, can't understand that the distinction between being a sovereign individual and the sovereign state,
yes.
and that the two doesn't yes. necessarily have the same interest. But my question yes. is, my question to you is the point of the question, because they keep feeding us that the civil society of Libya was in disarray or held hostage by Gaddafi. Can you validate or clarify, and I'm, you know, whether that's true or not?
Well, there's no doubt about it that Gaddafi represented a very strong influence and personality. The fact of the matter is that you had a monarchy, and the monarchy was brought to an end. And it was brought to an end in a you know, the bloodless coup by Gaddafi. Please pardon me. So that part is true. But then if we look at the structure of the government and where the government was headed and the accomplishments of the government. So, for example, there wasn't any homelessness. There was, what could you call it? Not profit sharing, but it was like revenue sharing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like revenue sharing for the entire country. And just the entire the ideology was different. So that you had the governing structure organized in revolutionary committees.
Mm-hmm.
You had the tribes, because the society, even now, is still tribal. So you had the tribes organized in a parallel governing structure. So you had the revolutionary committees, and that's where decisions were made. But you also had the tribes where policy decisions were made. And the people as a whole voted on the various policies. Now, what made Libya the emergency case and why the bomb started to fall was because of a move that Jamahiriya was making. So on this political system spectrum, you have on one side, you have monarchs. Well, if you, okay. How many people or who governs? If it's one person, then it's authoritarianism or dictatorship or monarchy. If it's two people or more, say it's a small group of people, then it could be a junta. It could be a political party that is ruling. If it's the masses of the people, the presumption is that it's democracy, and then it's either indirect democracy or direct democracy. If it's nobody, then that is said to be anarchy. Mm. Not necessarily anarchy in the sense that there's mass chaos everywhere, but anarchy in the sense that associations are voluntary without the, how can I say, without the coercive force of the state. Now, what the Libyans were moving toward was anarchy, because the Jamahiriya had said, had made the announcement that instead of handling all of the oil revenues in the form of the state, that the oil revenues would be distributed directly to the people. And this is what was under discussion. This is what had to be preempted, because imagine the example that's set if people are regulating their own affairs and regulating their own affairs and at the same time with for example, let me just give an example. If the oil revenues were X millions, then those X millions would be divided by 7 million people and given directly to the people. They do whatever they want to do with their money without the state, because the state, if you read the Green Book, what you will discern is that all of the problems of governance come down to the various different forms of government. And so basically the Jamahiriya is about self-governance and ultimately is about this idea that people are sovereign individuals and they know what's best for themselves, and therefore policy should emanate from them instead of just a group of people whose interest may or may not be the people at large.
In the shield of the state.
Is that
something
clear?
Yeah, in the shield of the state. In the shield of the state that they're representing. And if I can ask one more thing, Elliot, because, you know, Dr. McKinney, you were there. The thing that I honor so much is your cross-examining of Rumsfeld. But you were there in the nexus of the neocons push for what Obama, in my opinion, was continuing to carry out, even with 45, is continuing to carry out. But what I want to know if you would agree that what Gaddafi was, and as you said, what is the Jamahiriya was carrying out was the initiative that was placed back, and I'm going back to the non-aligned movement and the new economic order, that they were, you know, it seems that they were, which this, where you were, the neocons, which we take that back to Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, that they wanted to get the Mediterranean area. They wanted to stop the Southern Hemisphere from organizing under the politically and economically under the kind of fashion that a Gaddafi was continuously trying to implement, even up to the point that you were being there. Would that be a fair assessment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, if you go back, you can search on Muhammad Jalil, J-A-L-I-L, who was the leader of the Libyan National Conference, I believe. But that was just a little group of traitors that, Libyan traitors that had been handpicked by Hillary Clinton to overthrow the Jamahiriya. And after that had been successfully done, Muhammad Jalil said that Muammar Gaddafi was basically an anarchist. And so that story that I told you about the distribution of the oil revenues directly to the people and eliminating the state. It was the next step in the Jamahiriya. And that was what was preempted. That's why the bombing started. Jalil said it. So we had, so what we lost was far greater. It's far greater than just losing Libya, just losing access to direct and steer the oil revenue. It was not that. What we lost was our right to self-determination. I mean, it goes to the core of our humanity. That's what was lost. And the people in the U.S. who are posting on my Facebook, the black people in the U.S. who are posting on my Facebook page defending Obama don't even have a clue about what it means to be free.
That's you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Richard, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation, and you can get involved, too, with our guest, former congresswoman or congresswoman, human rights activist, Dr. Cynthia McKinney is with us. You can get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. I'm going to shift the conversation a little bit, start talking about Israel, and then we're going to come back to talk about some of this political environment and African-American politics in particular. We'll be right back. You can get involved. 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
In 1492, you came up on these shores. 700 years educated by the Moors. 17th century, genocide and the gun. Little passage blessed to market the Africans in the so-called lands of God. My kind were treated hard. From back then until now, I see and you agree. We have been a misrepresented people. From back then until now, just see my family tree. We have been a misrepresented people. We have been a misrepresented people.
Conversation tonight with former Congresswoman, human rights activist, Dr. Cynthia McKinney is with us in conversation, and you can be a part of the conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Before I kind of go into some things in reference to Israel, Dr. McKinney, I want to take a couple of calls here. And then we'll kind of get back to things. 347 area code, 347. 347, are you there? 347. I think 347 might be caught up in a fire there. Let's go to 4.
Something.
Let's go to 404. 404 area code, 404.
Hey, good afternoon. Miss Cynthia McKinney, how you doing? I love you.
Hello. And it's, I hope you're in the Atlanta area, 404. Yes. That's my home code, area code.
yes, ma'am. I'm in North Cross. And see, I was okay. In your district. I moved in, as soon as I moved in your district in North Cross, that's when they gerrymandered the whole doggone map. And I got into the Republican district. And so I was getting ready to vote for you. And then they flipped the script. They did it to us again.
But, they did it every time. You have to always be ready for white folk to flip the script.
Yes, ma'am. And I wish that about that subject, about that $90 billion you was talking about earlier. Like Elliot said, that information never got to the people.
I'm sorry about that. I mean, you know, I did.
Well, that's not on you, Dr. McKinney, because at the time you weren't a congresswoman. We had representatives or supposed representatives that supposed to get that information back to us, even before you went there to Libya. Those type of things should be known to the people, because if you're living in a country that has been that has failed black folks. And a government that has failed black folks, then there's always options. I mean, black folks shouldn't have to stay here. And if they don't want to stay here, they should be able to repatriate. And ways to do that should be facilitated by your representatives. But they don't seem, they're more concerned with assimilation than anything else. But go ahead. I didn't want to cut across you. Go ahead, Carla.
Yes, ma'am. I saw that post you posted this morning with Obama shaking hands with Gaddafi, right? I saw that, but I didn't read the comments. But I see what black people suffering from with all this style with no substance. They were so I got hemmed up into it in the beginning of seeing a black family riding around in that big Cadillac in the airplane, living in the big house, to most black people didn't go big people. So I got caught up in there for a minute. But I read every post you make. And I love you. And my final question is, like Elliot was getting ready to allude to, is it true that when you got in office, you had to sign an agreement that you got recognized or bow down to them evil Israelis? Is that true or not?
That's very true. That's very true. Let me just add this, because I think it's an important observation. That post that the caller is talking about, that if you go through and scroll through, the comments are like unbelievably critical of me for being mean to Obama. Now, what this indicates to me, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that I can get a more revolutionary line from white folk than I can get from black folk in the U.S. What this does, this has been my experience, that black voters, correct me if I'm wrong, only see the face and not the content of the candidate, which means, this is based on my experience, that black voters can be tricked by white people into supporting a black face that is actually anti-black in content.
Most definitely.
Yes, ma'am. That's how they get us with that Trojan horse.
And we don't even have to be a black face if we use the recent Alabama election as an example, unfortunately. Because Jones is not black, and you know they're celebrating, and the fear is that they'll be bringing in, a lot of in the 18 election we'll be bringing in a lot of black voters back to the Democratic Party in this here, this in the sense of representing, but there is no evidence that Jones is really going to provide anything for those black constituency, whether they're the women's vote or the counties in Alabama, the black counties that desperately need resources in the area. There has been no.
Well, now let me. That's right. That's right. I mean, no promise was made. No commitment was made. No platform put out, except that I got a D behind my name and I'm endorsed by powerful white people. That's all. So now we cannot have it both ways. We cannot want our leaders to be approved by the very forces that are oppressing us. We cannot have it both ways. If they are approved of by everywhere we look, from the entertainment industry to the political industry, to wherever we look, and they're approved, then there's something wrong with us if we think that they're going to do something for us because they haven't in the past and they won't.
I say.
So now we don't have, according to my, the sun has risen now, and so I can wake up. So according to my analysis, black people don't have a stake in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party.
Right.
Bingo.
If Donald Trump can burn down the Republican Party, there ought to be somebody burning down the Democratic Party. And then we build a political movement that will serve us.
Right.
We don't need to be saving the Democrats. What are we saving? You're going to save the billionaire Haim Saban? If you want to start getting into the Israel thing now, because that's the number one backer of the Democratic Party, Haim Saban.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. His attitude is, I've done this. I had done this thinking about the U.S. deep state, because one of the callers asked about my dissertation. No, your co-host. And actually, my PhD is in leadership and change. Put the change in there because there's all kinds of theories about how you lead change, how you manage change, how you cope with change on various different levels. And I'm starting this project. Actually, it started a while ago, and then it hit a bump in the road, which meant that it sort of fell back down, but now I'm picking it back up because I'm getting messages from people saying, we want it. And so basically what I do is I start my political science students off with Frantz Fanon, Kwame Nkrumah, Paulo Freire, and I give them a steep understanding of what it means to be a colonial subject with a colonial mentality.
Mm-mm.
And then from there to expose them to things that are in this culture here that are basically Eurocentrism and that are dysfunctional in terms of their own development as proud people of Asian ancestry. So now the content of what I teach here, I couldn't teach it in the U.S.
No, you couldn't.
And I don't even know if I would be well received by the students in the U.S. These students here are eating it up. But I don't know that I don't even know that black people, you know, from what I see, I just want to get black women out of weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
I can't even
I
do
agree.
That.
Yes, ma'am. Because see, well, cut off, but you're absolutely right. Because that melanin we got, we the only people that I have grow toward the sun. Okay. And that's how we get our inspiration from the Most High Creator, from the top of our head to the pineal gland, And then they trick these black women to put that mess on top of their head. And then they ride around, and you see them beating themselves up in the head. And I try to explain to them, you're right. See, Mr. McKinnon, black people are suffering from on the, they did this propaganda machine this beast got is doing a good job on us to have us even hate that's ourselves.
Right. That's right. That's
Carla, let me go. I'm going to move on.
Yes, ma'am. Mr. McKinnon, I'm going to try inboxing you with a whole bunch of material and stuff and stay in contact with you. My name is Wes.
Please do.
Yes, ma'am. I love you. And stay strong, stay in the light.
Thank you for your call, Wes.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Let's go back to 347. Let's go back to 347. 347, are you there?
Yes, I'm sorry, fellas. I didn't realize y'all muted me, and the fire truck was going past.
Oh, no problem.
I apologize. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you, Ms. McKinney, for being here. I had a couple of three questions for you. Are you familiar with cybernetics?
If you explain what you mean by that, I might be familiar with it.
Oh, okay. Well, if you're asking me, you probably not. So I'll just move on to the next question. I think that one of the big things that was pointed out with the election that just took place in Alabama is how they had over 600,000 black people come out and vote. And they said they were only 20 or 30% of the voting bloc. So it's telling me that they're lying about the populations of black people in some of these places, that we're being way underrepresented in the census numbers. How do we go about having an accurate head count in the United States?
And go ahead and ask your last one, and then I'll get, and then she can just cover them both. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and I wanted you to elaborate on the last gentleman asked if you had taken an oath or had to give any special privileges to Israel when you became a congresswoman. I just wanted to know exactly what did that entail and some of the things that you did specifically for Israel that benefited them. And I'll mute my line.
Thanks for your call, brother, and listen for the answer.
Well, I didn't do anything. That's why I'm not in Congress.
You know, listen, I told our listening audience the stories that you told me before when you were on about when they put that paper in front of you and wanted you to sign that pledge. But we're going to get to that. But did you want to cover his first question?
Okay, so the caller mentioned cybernetics, but then he didn't explain what he was talking about.
No, I think his second question was about the representation of our people and how we can get a little more accurate numbers.
Yeah, but I want to talk about cybernetics because I want to know what he was talking about.
one of the listeners wrote in that cybernetics is science and communication and auto control systems in both machines and living things.
So I understand that part. But is he talking about transhumanism? Is he talking about the singularity? Yes. What is he talking about? Yeah. What does he want to discuss? Because that is something that we need to be talking about.
Carla, are you still there? Do you ask your specific question?
We're absent from that.
Huh? Yeah, I'm still here. I know cybernetics it falls in many different categories, but I understand that it's been used in governing. It's not just computers, even though they use cyber, but it also has to do with human behavior and how to control people that you're governing. So I just wanted to know if that was like something that people in Congress had to take, or it probably goes under different names, like arbitration theory or game theory. It's a bunch of different names, or how they govern people, control people that they're over. But yeah, transhumanism and artificial intelligence, that's all parts of it too. But that's more in machines. I was talking about in human things.
Well, right. The singularity is the blending of man and machine. But then there's also this part of cybernetics that was used probably back in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. I think that was the Scientology. The S. Remember the S? Well, maybe you're too young to remember, but the S Foundation, I think that was, what was that guy's name? Not the science, L. Ron Hubbard. Hubbard. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Scientology.
That also is an aspect of cybernetics. So I was just asking the, you know, what did he want to talk about? I think it, if he's talking about, he said he wanted to know the use of cybernetics in the Congress. I think perhaps cybernetics is used on the people at large. If you're talking about sort of a mass kind of mind control operation, I think that that is what Hollywood
right.
has become.
Right.
And so that's why I'm in favor of the Me Too movement, anything you can do to quash, because that's one of the pillars of power. Say there's legs on the stool, as Dr. King often referred to centers of power. And so if these legs on the stool are centers of power, then Hollywood is definitely one of them. Silicon Valley is another one of them. And these also are the centers of control of the pro-Israel people who are inside our government as well. So basically, that's what I was getting into, is that now you've got the Israel firsters versus the I call them the Zyokons, and then you've got the Pilgrims. Now, the Zyokons are beginning to show us just exactly what life is like under them. But for those who were not paying attention to Palestinians, because Palestinians are the ultimate example of life under the Zyokons. Now, what I think has happened in the U.S. deep state is that, first of all, there was this fracture. The Pilgrims and the Zyokons worked together at first, and then there was the first fork, to use the cryptocurrency language, there was a fork. And the first fork then saw, well, I'm, you know, U.S. first versus Israel first. And that became a real schism inside the U.S. deep state. And we see that playing out now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we saw that playing out in the 2016 presidential election, with Hillary representing the Israel firsters and Trump being supported by the U.S. firsters. Now, and notice the distinction in my language. So now that the U.S. has been completely toppled, the Pilgrims have been completely toppled, there is no more Anglo-Zionist power configuration. It is a Zionist power configuration. And so now that the winner, we know who has their hand on the button, now the Zyokons have forked. They have split. And so now what we're witnessing is the U.S.-based, Western European-based Zionists versus the Eastern European Russian based Zionist. And so now let me just make a clarification for folks. When they're talking about Russian influence, they're really talking about Israeli, Russian Israeli Jewish influence. That's what they're talking about.
Yes.
But they're not saying it all.
Yes.
They're talking about, because 9 out of 10 oligarchs that were created at the fall of the Soviet, during the time of the fall of the Soviet Union, from Gorbachev, during that period from Gorbachev to Yeltsin, 9 of 10 of them were Israeli passport holders. So the oligarchs that, and then if you look, and so Trump, what is being made perfectly clear now that was not, that had been masked before, is that Trump represents that Eastern European, Russian side of the Zyokon fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Hillary represented the West. And Anglo, the Anglo is out. The Anglos are down and out. So we all are Palestinians now. And I have a friend, Catherine Austin Fitz, who follows the money. And she called me the other day and she said, Cynthia, we're out of time. Because the technologies of control that are in the hands of these rabid Ziocons, the technology that they control, the social control, human control technologies that they have at their in their hands is amazing. I'm wondering, where are the black hackers? Where are the, you know, where's the black intelligentsia? I'm not talking about Cornel West and Ta-Nehisi Coates. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about those people who are trained in this new technology to use it for us, to use it for revolutionary purposes.
Wow.
I've met with some of, you know, some of these groups, and but I'm telling you, we're not there.
Well, listen,
we're missing in action.
Richard, before you ask your question, let me grab this caller from Newport. Let's go to Newport News. Caller.
And I'd rather just listen.
Okay. Let's go to Denver, Colorado. Colorado? You there? Let's put them back on hold. Some lines are open. You can get involved in the conversation with Dr. Cynthia McKinney. She's with us this evening in conversation. Just dial 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Dr. McKinney, you know. Oh, go ahead, Richard.
I want to project, because I agree with you, Dr. McKinney. I agree with you, and I think we need to explore and try to at least identify these this developing power node, because I think that the techno development within the revolutionary or the change community don't exist yet, in my opinion. They're calling themselves conscious. They're historically and developing, but those nodes, but they're not necessarily a technocratic community. And the technocratic community is more tied to the technology mega companies of the Google, Facebook relationship to make money and all that. Now, there may be some fracture. We haven't seen that from a political perspective yet. But we do see those who are developing what they say their historical framework, because I would argue because of the break that happened during the 70s, that next generation didn't get to develop and come along, even as enthusiasts, because a lot of these technos, correct me if I'm wrong, are young enthusiasts who have the technical training. Some don't even have the academic background. They can be able to do this.
That's right.
Because they know how to do this and they focus compared to playing it, you know? I think that's one thing. But I think if we characterize it in the black bourgeoisie that exists now, the black bourgeoisie class that exists now, is in lockstep in line with the global economic state. But putting that aside, what came to me when you were saying that, isn't the Asian bloc the strength of resistance exists right now, like Bangladesh, like Singapore, like China, where that technological and, as you described, that that understanding of geopolitics and where they fit in as young people, where that is right now. Isn't it more there than even than the continent or the Caribbean or South America or North America as African Americans? Would you put politically that is where the center of resistance to the globalization of the Anglo global economic order is could get some resistance from?
Well, definitely. I like the way you say the power node, and definitely you have a node over here in Asia. But I would say the strongest node is in Latin America, which is what attracted me to my dissertation was actually on Hugo Chavez and U.S. Covert Hugo Chavez's leadership in face of U.S. covert efforts to undermine what he was trying to do. And actually not what he was trying to do, what he actually accomplished. Now, if you measure Chavez's accomplishments to those of the Congressional Black Caucus, I mean, it's like apples and oranges, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this reinforces the need, our need to cultivate and support leadership that really is, what can I say? Like I said in my third point, it means that Black voters can be tricked by white people into supporting Black faces that are actually anti-Black.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a level of discernment that we've got to have as to who is in our best interest, right? And that's a level of discernment that I don't see in our community. But in Latin America, you know, you've got, you had Chavez. You've got Maduro, who is not a Chavez. It's very hard to follow a transformational leader. But you've got Maduro doing the best he can under horrible circumstances of direct U.S. intervention and his next door neighbor, Colombia, as well. You've got Nicaragua with Daniel Ortega. You've got Evo Morales in Bolivia. So in Latin America, I say you've got revolutionary leaders who are also transformational leaders. And they're doing the best they can to hold on. You've seen that picture of the cat scratching and, you know, holding on like that. So they're doing everything that they can to hold on in the face of what I believe was the murder of Hugo Chavez. You know, six people in Latin America came up with cancer. At the same time, six leaders at the same time, you know, something happened at one of those meetings. Latin America for sure, but you know, Obama instituted the pivot to Asia because in the scheme of things, Asia does, you know, the grand colossus of the U.S. can sit on Latin America and the Caribbean easily because of their proximity to it. But don't forget that not only is China an Asian country, but Russia is too. So you've got Russia and China.
Right.
And you've got these organizations that are being formed to ward off the U.S. So I want Trump. He's talking about ending foreign aid. Yeah, end the foreign aid. Do you know that Obama tied U.S. aid, foreign aid, U.S. Aid to the African countries to their acceptance of homosexuality.
Yeah.
So now
and AFRICOM.
And I'm not saying, all I'm saying about that is that the aid, if the aid was meant to uplift the people, why make it contingent on something else? If it's to, say, make women into entrepreneurs, why tie it to something else?
You know, Dr. McKinney, that that example you gave, we just had another example of that, 2 weeks ago, when the UN voted, I think, 128-6 or something like that, against that move by Trump and the U.S. to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the nations that voted against it, Trump threatened to withdraw their aid. So it's similar to what you're, the example you're giving.
Good. Let him withdraw it. Let him withdraw it. You know, the best, in fact, I'm about to try, I hope they will accept my paper, write a paper to appear at a conference on Europe and Africa, and my position is going to be, get the heck out of Africa, Europe. Leave Africa alone.
you know,
and with that, the conference is to celebrate Africa and Europe working together, and I'm going to say I want Europeans out of Africa.
Yeah, you're not alone.
With Nana Akufo Addo, what he said to when the French. Your French leader was in Ghana. Is that an indication to you of maybe there is some semblance in Africa? Because I'm really concerned about that. That there is some African heads of state that truly understand Africa has to build its power nodes as it, you know, which was decoupled when Nkrumah and Sekou Touré and all of those were attempting, and they got knocked off by the West. Is he an indication to you?
Well, now, wait a minute. Let's be clear. Remember, Kwame Nkrumah was talking about a United States of Africa long before Gaddafi
right.
Was talking about that, right?
Right.
And so there were two nodes in Africa. There was the English-speaking node and the French-speaking node. And they had to come together in order to make the United States of Africa a reality.
Right.
But on the French-speaking side, that was against, and he basically was responsible for deep-sixing it, was Houphouet Boigny in Côte d'Ivoire.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Right.
But now who was on the English speaking side fighting the United States of Africa? Do you know who it was? It was Barack Obama's daddy. So we have to understand,
Kenya.
You gotta, and then we got Black Americans who are defending this guy. That Black Americans are defending this guy when Black Americans have been hurt the most by this guy.
Yes. Yes. Let me grab a call or two before we end up taking a break. Let's go back to Newport News. Newport News?
How you doing, gentlemen? I wanted to ask Dr. McKinney something that I've been watching for a while. She brought up Obama's involvement. But from what I understand, he also was the one that really expanded military involvement from about 10 different African countries to now 53 out of 54 on the whole continent, and actually moved AFRICOM to Europe to have a better control of expansion on the African continent, along with several multi-million-dollar drone bases. So I think we pretty much established that they're over there to try to contain natural resources of all kinds, from everything that goes into cell phones to even the minerals. So I want to know what she thinks about that, because I've asked a few supposed to be black politicians here, the CBC and some of the black commentators out on the West Coast, and they claim that's not true, but Obama actually expanded.
It is
Africa.
True. It is true.
And I would like to put one more thing out and then sit back. Economic exploitation using people who actually were the front line for Hillary Clinton. When you look up Black Ivory and Cheryl Mills, these are black faces on the total exploitation of that continent. Black Ivory.
Absolutely right. I'm so glad you brought up Cheryl Mills. What Cheryl Mills did in Haiti is a crime. And she did it at the express instruction of Hillary Clinton. She stole the election in Haiti and subjected the Haitian people to 5 years of a president that they did not select, that they did not elect, that they did not choose. That's what Cheryl Mills did. And black people still voted for Hillary. I just don't understand. I do not understand the political dysfunction, and so I've rejected it. So I don't, you know, it raised my blood pressure. So
Don't let it do that.
I'm here. I'm going to do what I can do. Like, I'm trying to put together these power cells, which is a way to implement the Paulo Freire tools for liberation. And I don't think I have much to work with. And in fact, let me just say another thing. Right now, the most recent column by Glenn Ford is about his use of the term misleadership class, misleadership signifying the Congressional Black Caucus. I absolutely agree with Glenn. Right. Because I had, when I was trying to get, remember all the outrage about Hurricane Katrina, which was momentary. I was trying to put together members of the Black Caucus. There was a, because of the outrage, there was a committee formed that was to investigate what happened, what didn't happen, what should have happened, and to make policy. Now, members of the Congressional Black Caucus are not there to dress well. They're not there to look good. They're there to make policy. And this was an opportunity for us to make policy on behalf of the people who were the main ones who were negatively affected by the lack of policy. And it wasn't a lack of policy. It was just folk didn't do anything, like Chertoff and Mike Brown and the rest of them. They just didn't do anything. So anyway, I'm trying to see, do I have another, did I schedule another interview? So anyway, I asked the members of the Congressional Black Caucus. There was, I think it was $19 million set aside to conduct the committee hearings. I invited Mama D, who recently passed, and I was the one that had the hearing entitled The Impact of Race and Class on the Hurricane Katrina Response. That was my committee, and it was there. I mean, that was my hearing, and the people who were there at my invitation, where the leader of the Black Chamber of Commerce said that they had blown the levees before and that they blew the levees this time, and he had evidence. And, the witnesses left the members of Congress with their mouths hanging open because they were stunned to hear this kind of testimony. Well, why aren't 40 members of Congress, black members of Congress, bringing this kind of testimony to the Hill? Okay, well, then when I tried to get the members of Congress, the CBC members, to participate in the Hurricane Katrina committee, you know what one of the members who's still there told me? Cynthia, this is an exact quote. You just have to accept that when the leadership tell us to do something, we're going to do it.
Mm. Yeah, well.
Plantation policy.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, when you were with us about a couple of years ago, Dr. McKinney, and you talked about, you gave that example of Toby and everybody watching him getting beat.
Yes.
It's so apropos, right? Dealing, you know, the caller talked about cybernetics. I don't think it's sophisticated what they're doing to black folks. Some black folks just want to be close to white folks, and they'll do anything they can to do it. I don't think it's that complicated. And plus, they couple it with not providing black folks with information. I think that Telecommunications Act that the Clintons pushed and got passed devastated information in the black community. Because now you have a syndicated... Go ahead.
Yeah. No. I was just going to say, but the information is on the internet.
Yeah, it is.
You have to have a desire. I mean, it's, you know, like the name of your program, Time for an Awakening. Our people are sleeping.
Yes.
And you cannot bring a revolutionary message into even the HBCUs.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to teach it at Howard University, and they invited Comey.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
So you can, even the, you're right about the lack of access, but then on the other hand, we have to want to find it.
Yes.
I never had, you know, we have to have a desire to find it. And that's where the awakening comes.
Dr. McKinney,
we have the desire to.
How much longer you have with us? Because I don't want to hold you past.
I just got this call from an unknown number, and I'm thinking that I made a commitment to do another show, because like I'm in my semester break.
Okay.
And that's why I could I even woke up on time this morning. And I was
very pleased
to come on your show.
Well, let me grab a couple more callers before you leave us. Hold on. Let me grab. Let's go to 215. Okay. 215, area code 215. Get involved in the conversation.
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Brother Richard.
I'm down there.
All right. My dear sister McKinney. How you doing, my dear sister?
I'm hanging in there. I'm trying to survive.
Well, Sister McKinney, I was going to say what an honor is to talk to you. You one of my sheroes and stuff. You know, I don't know if you remember Sister McKinney. A few years ago, when Brother Arnold Foster bring you here to Philadelphia for our conference with Sister Cola and us down there at the Philadelphia Hotel by the airport, and Brother, what's the brother's name? I can't think of it. Brother Khalil, he drove you to the airport and everything. I don't know if you remember that meeting and stuff. We had a good conference. We were talking about black issues and stuff like that at the time. And we broke bread together, Sister McKinney. We had a good time and stuff that day. I think it was back in 2011. Yeah. I was honored to be in your presence, Sister McKinney. And I'm going to tell you something. I tell Brother Elliot and I tell Brother Richard this all the time, that if we had more people like you in Congress right now, our people could be so far advanced. If we had more people like yourself, Brother Al Green,
right.
Cedric Richmond, but they got backbone. And it's just something, there's nothing fancy, Sister McKinney. People that's not afraid of the white man. There's no two ways about it. And so these Negroes we got in office right now in the city, state, and federal level, they're scared to death of white people. And like Brother Elliot so correctly said, Sister McKinney, it's a sickness among some of our people. Like Brother Jerome Fox said here in Philadelphia, who's the author of the book Addicted to White. Some of us love that white man's foot up our behind. You see over there in Zimbabwe right now as we speak over in Africa. No sooner that Negro took office to replace Brother Mugabe, that Negro has started a process of giving the land back to the white man. Just that fast.
Yeah,
I mean, we in bad shape, but a lot, we got that mindset. We are sick. We love. We some of us talk black. We can talk Afrocentric, all this type of stuff. But some of our people, when it all comes down to it, when the rubber meets the road, Sister McKinney, we love that white man foot up our behind. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I mean, I look at how even today, Sister McKinney, how our people controlled by the Zionists and stuff. I was reading the final call today when I was having dinner. I was reading a final call from October of this year, October of, I think, the third issue of 2017, where they played an excerpt from Minister Farrakhan spoke of Pittsburgh at the behest of Bear Smith. Now, he had a sister named Melanie Campbell. She was supposed to be a real strong Afrocentric sister. She was afraid to appear on the roster with Minister Farrakhan because the Zionists told her, if you do that, we're going to cut your funding off. And I'm saying, what kind of Afrocentric sister is you that you're controlled by your enemy anytime you can't appear on the roster with your brother? And Bear Smith, she came under attack from the rabbis in Pittsburgh because they told her, like, and again, Sister McKinney, they talked to our people like they children, told her, how dare you invite Farrakhan without getting permission from us first? I said, what is best with a child? She got to ask you? I said, y'all don't go around asking black people when y'all want to invite Netanyahu, that thug, over here to America. Y'all don't ask black people their permission, you know? I mean, it's just so sad, the state of affairs, Sister McKinney, that we are in as a people. These Caucasians treat us like children, like they're our mothers and fathers, and some of us acquiesce to that kind of mentality. And you wonder why we sit back, Sister McKinney, you look down and see like Baltimore. You got black children sitting in schools in Baltimore right now, Sister McKinney, with coats on because they don't have heat in their class. But white people, kids in schools in the suburbs in the city with nice classrooms, up-to-date textbooks, everything. But our kids sitting in classrooms. We pay taxes like white people do, but we sitting in classrooms with our kids with coats on. I mean, this is the kind of madness and stuff that we got. Asians got stop and goes all over our communities selling poison to our people, and you got black politicians behind the scenes taking money off of them, getting paid and stuff. You know, I mean, we face such a myriad of problems, Sister McKinney. That's why I miss you. That's why I miss you so much being in Congress, because I know when you was in there, Sister McKinney, you fought the good fight, and you still, even though you're not in Congress no more, you're still fighting the good fight. I miss you so much, Sister McKinney. I wish the guy you could get back in politics and become a congressperson again, or even that high senator or whatever, because we need people like yourself. I miss and love you so much, Sister McKinney. I do. I really do.
Well, thank you so much for that. And, you know, I hate to see the waste of power, because we do have power, but our power is not being used effectively in our behalf. And so anyway, thank you for your comments.
You're welcome,
and I do remember that meeting. And I remember you.
thank you, Sister McKinney. I appreciate it. It was an honor. And last point, Sister McKinney, Dr. Asante, who has the Afrocentric thing here in Philadelphia, he said that Barack Obama, and this just tells you right there about all you need to know about this Negro, he said Barack Obama has the worst policy towards Africa than even his white predecessors, Clinton, President Carter, Reagan, Bush, all them other people. He got the worst policy towards Africa. Here's a black man whose father from Africa, but he had the worst policy towards. He dropped more drones on Africa than what them niggas did. More than what Clinton and Reagan and Nixon, Obama administration dropped more drones on Africa than any previous white president. That tells you all you need to know right there. Okay? But thank you for the time, Brother Elliot, yes. Brother Richard.
Thank you for your call. Right.
Thank you, Sister McKinney.
Let's go to 646.
Thank you.
646-646.
Yes, yes. Good evening. Sister McKinney, all I can say is that you have always been a jewel for African women to witness and to see, and the manner in which you have held firm against that Jew. Because the bottom line is, they thought they was going to destroy you, but they didn't. They just took away a cracking seat. But my question to you is two things. Is the nut that's in the White House as dangerous as we perceive him to be, and the world, how do they view that nut in the White House? And in the end, when it's all said and done, is it not only true that they won't impeach him, but that he'll probably be reelected because of the nature of white supremacy in this country?
Okay, I think we need to make a distinction that, and the distinction is that white people seems to be a term that we use as if white people are monolithic. But white people are not monolithic. There's a subsection of them that are Zionist. And so we need to be very clear who the Zionists are and who the Zionists are not. Because that lack of distinction can cause us to aim our fire at the wrong target. So what got me to thinking about all of this was I listened to, there's a imam by the name of Imran Hossein, and he's from Trinidad, and he makes the distinction, although he's basically talking about Muslims, but he makes a distinction between Eastern Europeans and Western Europeans, those who are part of the Vatican, the Christian world, who are part of the Vatican and sprang from the Vatican, so the Protestants as well, and those who were never a part of the Vatican, who have a different, from the Orthodox religion. So when I started thinking about this, I said, well, yeah, so this is a distinction that I now make for my political science students, that, you know, we have to name who are the ones that colonized the world? Who were the ones that infected the world with Eurocentrism and this feeling of self, feeling of inferiority? Who were the ones that Frantz Fanon and Paulo Freire were writing about? That all of that sort of knowledge base and experience was with a certain segment. It was not with the Christian Orthodox, who are basically the Greeks, the Ethiopians, and the Russians are you know, sort of a different, from a different class. And so anyway, I just sort of let me make a pretty controversial recommendation. And that is, there's an organization called War on the Horizon. And there is a video. Now, you know, War on the Horizon is an organization. They're anti, you're familiar with them?
Yes.
Yeah, and Intelligent Genie, I think.
Okay.
Irritated Genie.
Yes, Irritated Genie. There's a young man who has done some research. Actually, this should be turned into a paper that is read widely. But
you're talking about the small hats?
Or a video that's distributed. Yes.
Small, yes.
The research on the civil rights movement and how the civil rights movement was influenced from the very beginning, from right after the Civil War up to now, by these Zionist Israel First people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even before there was an Israel. These people injected themselves into our movement. Now, here's where I say we go wrong when we invite other people. I mean, there's some meetings we just supposed to have among ourselves. Mm-hmm. And one photograph that's so revealing, he gives the first photograph of the NAACP meeting back in 1901, I think it was. That first photograph, And it's actually more of them than it is of us. And then he gives a photograph of one of their meetings where it's none of us and it's all of them.
Well, that's the way
now,
it is
this
today.
This is something we need to learn. So we need to learn, why is it that we took a road away from self-sufficiency and took the road to dependency? Why is it that we took the road from being happy where we are and building up our own community to wanting to integrate into another community? Why was it where these important forks took place? He points out that it was under the influence of these Black people who were influenced by this particular group of people. It's a tremendous amount of research that this young man has done, and every Black person, I think, needs to see it.
Yes, it is a good documentary. I fully agree. You know, and Dr. McKinney, and I don't want to, I'll give it back to you, Jay. I think the example that you gave was spot on. And it kind of goes back to what Richard was talking about in the beginning about the recognition of W.E.B. Du Bois's life, because I think his life went full circle. I think in retrospect, looking back and just a critical analysis, and I might be wrong, Richard, I want you to weigh in on it because you're at the museum and there's a tour guide. I think that in retrospect, Elder Du Bois realized how wrong he was. That's why he almost did a 180-degree philosophy shift from what he was around the turn of the century to what he ended up with near the maybe the last 10 or 15 years of his life.
Can you say that about Martin Luther King also?
Yes. Yes. In the last maybe 2 years of his life. He didn't even really get the chance to really start delving into his awakening until his life was ended.
But, you know,
right.
I would, if I may, you know, I think that, and Dr. McKinney, I think that you raised this point in relationship to these individual transformational leaders and the organizational structure that exists amongst this, and it's the only language I have right now, this Black bourgeoisie class that has made an alignment with the ruling Anglo, or as y'all are saying, the Jewish elite all along. And that alignment has always been a part of a subordinate position. I think we have to be clear. Now, these individuals who come, they have only as individuals and as transformational leaders, they only have one type of organization to try to implement, because you look at Du Bois, when he went to Atlanta, he was trying to create an economic infrastructure for the Southern Black poor. And the Atlanta College did not allow him to do it. When he went to Booker T and asked the same thing, and Booker T did not allow him to do it. But when you look at those institutions, where did they get their funding from? Where did they get their okay from? And so I think that we have to be clear that from the transformation leader compared to the structural, where you have a bourgeoisie, Black bourgeoisie class, and it's probably easier to see if we look at Haiti. It was those Black or mulattoes, they called them, in Haiti that had plantations. They had to be ran out of Haiti just as much as the European French, English and Spanish had to be ran out of Haiti, because they controlled the plantations, they controlled the enslavement process, and they didn't care about the people themselves, and even though they were Black themselves. But when you see...
Now, how does this...
I'm really looking for your feedback as far as concerning... Jay, I don't mean to hold you up.
Okay. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I want to amplify what you're saying, because You've got black people reeling in the city of Chicago over Rahm Emanuel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the black people came, who were my friends, and they came to me and they said, you know, should we vote for him? I said, heck no, because Rahm Emanuel, first of all, it's a little bit personal because Rahm Emanuel, wanting in line with his Israel First orientation, was counting the war funding votes and made sure that there were votes enough to pass the war funding bill. And, of course, because these wars are being fought for Israel. And I was a no vote, and he recruited someone to run against me, and the bill to fund the bombing, the continued bombing of Iraq, passed with not one vote to spare. So if I had been there, that bill would have failed, and then all of this war money, we'd be having a different conversation now. We'd be arguing over where to put the money in the budget that used to be spent on wars. But no, that was not to pass. And so Rahm Emanuel then left the Congress and ran for mayor of Chicago. He won every black precinct.
Mm-hmm.
He won every black precinct. So there was a Puerto Rican leader who was more transformational, but black people rejected a transformational leader and rejected the possibility of a transformational alliance for themselves and went the old-fashioned way with the Jewish candidate.
Well, you know, and Jenny.
And so now today, the younger Kennedy just said that Rahm Emanuel is about to run all of the black people out of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
With a new round of gentrification. Now, let's go over, let's fast reverse, rewind, back to California, back when they had the opportunity to, when the Gray Davis was recalled, and that recall was successful. What black people should have done, this was my counsel that was not paid attention to, was to ally with Cruz Bustamante and create a new political paradigm for California. But no, they didn't do that. They didn't do that. And so at every step, when we have the opportunity to be revolutionary, to be transformative, we are not. And we rely on the that old black Jewish alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that black Jewish alliance that the young man from War on the Horizon sheds light on, just exactly what is that?
Well, you know, black people just like to be governed by, you know, these so-called Jews or whatever you want to refer to them, and, you know, white people. I mean, that's just the reality. We don't want to be in the power position to have to deal with issues on our own and govern ourselves. I mean, you could just look at, like you're saying, about Emanuel, who, if anybody studies his history, he's nothing more than the enemy of black people. So, I mean, you know,
exactly.
Who do you blame? You can't constantly keep on blaming him for our own self-destruction. We need to start blaming one another and dealing with one another like they did in South Africa, which I'm a component of, the Netloose. So, you know, but I really wanted you to answer my question in regards to Trump. And, you know, what is the dealings over on the world stage? Because I noticed, and maybe you will be able to drop some science that I really haven't heard anybody say. Could you really explain to our people that's out there listening, this relationship with Jared Kushner his nephew in international affairs. You know what I mean? Because I think it all has to do with keeping Israel as the focal point and making sure that nothing happens to them and allowing them to dictate our foreign policy. But, you know, I was wondering if you could expound on this, because from my understanding and from what I've witnessed, he's a political novice. So I guess maybe you could expound on that. And thank you again, sister. Be safe, be strong, and stay African. Talk to your brothers later.
Thank you for your call, Jay.
The Trump presidency, I think he's doing all the right things to expose who really controls the U.S. The last fig leaf has been removed. And so I think it's a good thing. I wouldn't care. Like I said, I don't have a stake in the Republican Party. I don't have a stake in the Democratic Party. I don't even have a stake in the current political system, or as your co-host has so eloquently said, I'm going to borrow his phrase, in the power nodes that exist inside the U.S. We don't have a stake in their continuation. So anything that blows them up is fine.
Wow, okay.
It's fine with me. As long as we are in the business of building a replacement.
Okay.
And that's where we are lacking, because we're not in the process of building. So what I am proposing to do, or what I have proposed to do with this power cells project, is to put a local, is to create, you know, actually it's based on the model of the local organizing committees for the Million Man March.
Okay.
And instead of being local organizing committees, what I'm proposing is that we have local action committees. These action committees will consist, and I'm calling them power cells because this is completely different, completely new. They will consist of people from the entire political spectrum. So you have far right, center, far left, lifelong Democrats, lifelong Republicans, sitting in the same room at the same table and trying to figure out what it is that we have in common. That's not leaving anything behind. So it's not that you don't have differences, but we're focusing on what we have in common. And as a result of trying to figure out what it is we have in common, maybe we can move the policy football down the field and score a goal for the people instead of for the special interests. That's my hope. And in the process, what I expect will happen, or actually there are behavioral science tools that can be used. This is what I studied for my PhD. So there are, you know, I told you the PhD was in leadership and change. And so these are these change theories coming into play. Mm-hmm. So now change has been, most of the change theory has been generated for the corporations, because the corporations are the ones that can pay for it. Like, for example, I have to try and fit this all in, all of the intellectual work that to put the thing together. I have to try and fit this all in after I'm already tired from doing my job, right? Mm-hmm. And the corporations will pay so that this becomes your job. So I, you know, so there's a lot of evidence to back the efficacy of these tools. One is a personal transformational tool. The other one is the tool that's used to turn a group into a team.
Mm-hmm.
So the group is disparate individuals. The team is a set of people who are working toward the same goal and the same mission. and to have a conversation about, basically to break down some of the divide and rule strategy. Like I said, this kind of comes from Paulo Freire. So Paulo Freire's paradigm for liberation is that he identifies the mechanisms of oppression, and I mentioned them earlier: conquest, divide and rule, manipulation, and cultural invasion. The cultural invasion entails the fact that you are so oppressed and oppression has become a part of the culture that you don't even realize that you are oppressed. It's sort of like that Aldous Huxley quote that says that the slaves actually love the slavery, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that basically is where we are. The manipulation is that's the Hollywood and that entertainment. That's the mechanism that's used to achieve the divide and rule and the cultural invasion.
Okay.
And the conquest, although in some cases, the conquest is a physical military conquest. But nowadays, the big war is for your mind. Steve Biko said the greatest weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. So, then what Paulo Freire says on the other side, these tools of liberation are cooperation, unity for liberation, organization, and cultural synthesis. So basically what you're trying to do is to create a cultural revolution within each individual. What Frantz Fanon tells us is that we have been affected by our colonial experience. And
definitely.
So now, you know, if we can say colonial experience, we can say our oppression. Our psychology has been affected by our oppression. And so anyway, I don't want to get into all of this, but there's solid scientific evidence that the particular tools that I would like to use have worked in other settings. Will they work for a whole country? And so what I say is we want to transform our country by transforming its people. Mm-hmm. Basically, we've been rigged. Trump said the system is rigged. We know that. But our minds have also been rigged. So this is an effort to try and unrig our minds as we unrig the system that oppresses us.
Let me try to grab one more before we let you go, Ms. McKenna. You spent 2 hours with us. Let me grab this final call. This call for you. Let's go back to Denver, Colorado. Denver.
Hey, how y'all doing, Elliot?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Ramon, Ms. McKenna, thank you for denying those Zionist psychopaths any type of aid or consent. That deserves what they call the highest black, you know, self-respect. I appreciate you for that. I also just want to ask you a couple of quick questions. What does the 13th Amendment mean to us in modern society? Are we really still in a global slavery? And what does science, when I think about science, I think about when we talk about gene editing, DNA, if black people got a better understanding of things like Monsanto seed, where it germinates, I mean, when they plant it, it sterilizes the farmer's land and causes the crops not to regrow without replanting these Monsanto seeds, which is GMO. I think when I think about white people, and I don't even want to say white people, I just want to say anybody that subscribes to the legal classification of the term white and their allies. When I think about white people, they are a scientific experiment that we did that has gone bad on us that would be the equivalent of a GMO product. And the quicker we learn this science and understand that you can create people and these things can be used as a weapon, we might start getting a better understanding of who we dealing with. So my question is, is any of that sane and rational? Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, the 13th Amendment is very interesting because we say that slavery was ended, but slavery wasn't really ended. And so slavery was moved from outdoors to indoors, you could say. Slavery was moved from the entirety of at least the South to the prison setting. But there's another kind of slavery that exists as well, you know, sort of the debt slavery, which is controlled by these same people, you know, the bankster, fraudulent bankster policies that have become the law also are a different kind of slavery, but a slavery, a tie nonetheless. Okay. So what does it mean to be white? I went into this a little in my dissertation as well because it was important for me. You've got the researcher, Jeff Perry, who is today's researcher on what it means to be white. And white is a social construct. It is a construct that was created for the purpose of social control. And so those people who had control of the society wanted to maintain control of the society. And so they created this class of people called white people. Before, they were Irish people, they were German people, they were African people, they were whatever, you know, we were called. I think at one point we were called Ethiopians. In the early days of the U.S., we were called Ethiopians. And there was no this white thing. But as the fact of the matter is, if you look at population trends, what you will see is that these people who we call white people, the Europeans, they are not reproducing. And Africans are reproducing. So the population trends can only go one way. I mean, I'm talking global population. And this brings into mind the thinking of Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, who I think had it absolutely right. She was just way ahead of her time, but she had it right. And so just in terms of demographic trends anyway, this is something that is a reality. And look, I'm over here in a country that's got 168 million people. Right next door, there's over a billion people. Right to the north is over a billion people, almost 2 billion people. I mean, Homo sapiens have done very well in this part of the world. And if you look at Italy, Germany, they're not even reproducing enough to continue their population at its current levels. So there is something that's going on. And Monsanto, well, Monsanto is a threat. And it's a threat to our very humanity. And so there was in Australia, the kangaroos are dying, not by the tens, not by the thousands, not even by the tens of thousands. They're dying by the millions. And the suspicion, they don't know what it is, but the suspicion is that it's some kind of GMO food that they've been, you know, crop that they've been eating, and it's killing them. As I learned as I was writing my dissertation, that the Latin American, the Spanish language, the Spanish speakers speak about technologies of life and technologies of death. Monsanto is a technology of death. And if we don't even realize it, thank goodness I'm here, so I don't have to deal with too much of that. There's a little of it here as well, but I don't eat those foods. Generally, everything here is still basically organic. But,
Miss McKinney, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I have one more question. So let me ask you a question real quick. Does and what, if possible, does any of this stuff about the war really have a hidden agenda about Antarctica? I've been reading, researching things that tells me the way they're hoarding the African people out of Southern Africa north is like they're actually making a clearance so they can do something unseen. And with all this research that I've found about Admiral Byrd's adventures down there in Antarctica and all these riches that lay on the soils of Antarctica soil and how this ice wall was purposely put there. And now that it's starting to melt away, it's revealing this land. And I would wonder, and I'm asking you, would this be a purpose for America to push so hard, considering we don't even have a budget for land fighting from what I keep reading? We have ships that are supposed to be made that ain't being made because there's no budget. Basically, we broke. And I think all America is trying to do is rely on an air or a missile type of war in hopes of winning. And I just don't see that happening. But I want to know if this could have some, you know, does some of this stuff tie into that Antarctica land continent? Thank you.
Thank you for your call.
Well, definitely. Something's going on. You must have seen the same videos that I just recently watched. Something is going on, and the UK didn't fight Argentina for just a little chunk of land, you know, the Falkland Islands. They didn't fight them for a chunk of land. They were fighting them for probably a staging ground that gives them proximity to Antarctica without actually being in Antarctica, or on Antarctica. So I think you're absolutely right to be investigating and trying to increase your knowledge about what's going on in Antarctica, because as well as what's going on in outer space and why Elon Musk is allowed to fail so many times. Whose boy is he? That I recently asked that question. And then all of a sudden, things started to appear. Maybe I just started noticing after I asked the question out loud publicly that there are a lot of people who say, well, you know, the intelligence services are invested in Elon Musk, and Elon Musk is on their side, meaning the Ziocons. Then sometimes he's on the other side, meaning U.S. First. So we don't know where he is. What his positions are. But yes, it's important for us to increase our knowledge about everything that's going on around us. As I said, when I think it was the last speech I gave to, Chicago, and I said, even an amoeba responds to its environment. So we need to know what our environment is so we know what the proper response is so we can not only just survive, but so that we can thrive.
Dr. McKinney, before I let you go, when you coming back to the States?
I'll probably be back in February, next month.
Okay, all right. We're going to have you on again. The last time we had you on, I didn't realize it's been over a year, but we need to touch base with you to have this political discussion. Myself and Brother Richard, we've had guests on that are pushing and that are heavily involved right now with independent black political parties. You have the African People's Organization down there in the St. Louis area, the Hot Black Coffee Party down there in New Orleans. You have the Jackson Kush Project that put Chokwe Anta Lumumba in office down in Jackson. And you also have the 1 million conscious and conscientious black voters and contributors. So I want you to get involved in that political discussion. But we'll arrange that. I'll be in touch with you. And I'm glad that you were with us this evening. Happy to have you with us. And before you leave. Before you leave,
you really helped fashion and confirm mine and I think the rest of our understanding of the global implication of where we sit as and the type of thinking, the geopolitical thinking we have to have in order to just deal with our local national politics. But that whole thing of transformational leadership and the question about what kind of how do we create structure where we can have that really be anarchist or more democratic, true democratic?
Yes, that's right.
Dr. McKinney,
thank you so much.
Wait a minute, before you go, the ways that people can read some of your articles, where they can log on to your website. The floor is yours.
Okay. My website is allthingscynthiamckinney.com. My Facebook page is Cynthia McKinney Official. And I'm on Twitter. I'm on Gab. I'm on Steemit. So I've got the socials covered. You just put in Cynthia McKinney and you'll find me. But I prefer you go to my, if you're interested in this power cells, go there to the link that says Power Cells at the top, and then sign up. There's a form you can register for the Power Cells. Do that, please, and help me get started on that project, which I hope will be our way to defeat the deep state and conquer, divide, and rule, finally.
I'm glad to have you with us, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care now.
We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and I want to thank our guest this evening. I didn't think that she'd be on, Richard. You know, because she was on the other side of the world, I was going to try to reschedule her. But I'm glad that she, because we were prepared to just go on open forum and just talk with the listeners. But I'm glad that she, at the last minute, was able to connect with us. Former Congresswoman, human rights activist, Dr. Cynthia McKinney was with us this evening. It's good to have her on and give a perspective of...
It expands our exploration on just, you know, as she's raising, you know, she as the rest of the listening audience who call in, you know, I guess the simple version is what's wrong with us when you look at the electoral politics or power specifically. You know, what's wrong? Why aren't we creating social and political economic power like we should be?
Well,
you know, she's raising that.
The three things is going on, Richard, and we talked about all three on the program. And, you know, when she talked about what did she term it? She didn't say discussion groups. An idea that she came up with.
Of power cells.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about having these think tanks in all these areas where we are.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost similar to what she's talking about. We got to come up with strategies to move our people forward. Three things that she touched on this evening that is obvious to us. One, this, and I lost my train of thought, but, let me say this. When she said that Dr. Frances Cress Welsing was a little ahead of her time, you know, on some of her assertions and theories and true assessments of our situation dealing with Europeans, something is clear to us, and it's clear to me, that no matter how the European want to thrust himself as far as being master of the universe, in control of things, that he's not in control of things. See, our ancestors knew that it was higher powers that was on this planet. You could see the knowledge that our ancestors had compared to the knowledge of all human beings now, that it was a greater intelligence in the past. And they knew that it was forces that we... Wait a minute. Hold up. I'm just getting a little interference. They knew that it was forces that we don't understand that was in control of things. Just put it in that perspective. And this man, when she gave that example of people still growing in population, she mentioned other people in different areas of the planet, and also people of African descent still growing in population. No matter how this man wanted to throw a monkey wrench in that. And you see that his population is decreasing. They're not reproducing. He's not in control of that, Richard. He wants to be. He does everything he can to try to change that paradigm, but he's not in control of that. It's something else going on here. We got to prepare ourselves to move our people forward. In all aspects, educationally, culturally, politically, and economically, we got to start preparing our people to move forward. He has done a job on us. Colonialists, neo-colonialists on the other side of the ocean and the mother continent. Slavery, however you want to put it, he has done a job on the minds of our people. But also, Richard, the collaborators with what's going on, with white supremacy, with Europeans, the collaborators among our people is a problem that's got to be dealt with. Some people had the philosophy that you don't talk bad about your people, just leave them be. You can't leave a sore fester because it'll spread to other parts of your body. You got to deal with it. We got to come up with ways to deal with it. Collaborators is hurting our people and been hurting and continues to hurt our people. We got to come up with ways to deal with this. We got to.
I agree. And the two things that, and it was three that I seen that she raised was that whole thing of individual sovereigns. I'm glad, you know, we had Ezra Alarone on talking about sovereignty. So to clarify that the political positioning is that each one of us have to see ourselves as individual sovereigns is, and then coming together, you know, it compared to having a representative sovereignty or a representative republic, it's like really reinforcing what we've been doing here. And, you know, so that was really critical and important. I think in this point of transformational leaders, and I wanted to link that up to what you're saying, because it seems out of the discussion, one thing that came also is that not only about the collaborators, but being able to protect having the structure that protects the transformational leader to be able to actually do the transformation. Because it seems to me what has occurred is the transformational leaders, leader and leaders, male and female, get taken out. And that's, you could say, they get taken out with the support of collaborators, or they get taken out directly by. But the point is that these men and women, women and men that come on the scene that truly are able to take us to the next level, our structure, they get taken out. And when they get taken out, that stops the ability to grow, you know, to expand. And what is left is those who are in unison, in agreement. And I think that is so important that we expand our historical understanding of that agreement further back. Because if we look at it, that is just something that happened right now. And in our lifetime cycle, we won't understand that if you go to a person like a Juniper Hammond of the 1780s and you read what he wrote, and he wrote, you know, slaves, this is an African who is enslaved, you know, that in the Bible says, obey your master, and that you should listen to me because, you will listen to me because I'm just like you. Well, isn't that a continuity from then to now? Mm-hmm. You know, and if we have to understand that history, and that's what Du Bois was talking about when we talk about on the other side, that we are people that from a civilization. So when we talk about Kemet, at the time when he was there, there was still the question, was Egypt African? Well, today it's no question that Egypt's African, but that's a civilization that we created, mm-hmm. which gives us that reinforcement. Well, what we did, we can do, you know? So I think that the protection of that transformational leader was another thing that I see that she brought up. And this last thing, and you know, that we need to be more clear about, and it's interesting that way she put it, in the sense of this European Western Jewish Zionist alliance, and this Eastern Russian Jewish European alliance.
You know, Richard, I don't want to cut you. I want you to keep your train of thought. But she was the first one to put it in that context, because mm-hmm. you can see that that it was so-called Jewish folks supporting Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. But now you see another faction. I'm glad. Well, she put it into a context that I never looked at in that vein, put it that way. But go ahead. I didn't mean to cut across you.
No. I think it's important to start breaking this down. And really, and I don't want to, I'm trying to figure out how to say it, because we have to now get more a more global understanding as African people where we are, as especially Africans in North America, in our geopolitical sense. And therefore, when we are in these think tanks or we are in these power cells, our analysis is not just so general, because these are monopolies. When she mentions that, she's talking about people who are controlling general monopolies that control world resources. So even if they are in Antarctica, they're in there because they are going to produce something out of dominating that natural resource. And right now, you know, globally, there's 30 giant banks that control all the resources in the world. Now, where do African people and where do North American African people, what banks we control that has control within this global system that they have created interconnectedness? Because we see the interconnectedness because 2008, all of them was crying except the Asians and the South Americans, which she said, which I thought was interesting too, you know, that because China, they, you know, the European group, their network was about to collapse. And they needed Bush the Younger and Obama. You should have seen them run to the White House, save our banks. You know what I mean? So I think that our political economic maturity in our analysis has to step up. And it is not, and even that, when you talk about Libya, and you talk about, if you go back to the Bangdown Conference, and you go back to the Non-Aligned Movement, and you go back to Brzezinski, who was talking about getting, what she mentioned, that European, that Mediterranean basin, because their natural resources, oil, that can move from Russia to China. Where are we at in that? Well, she talked about the number percentage of PhDs are from Nigeria. And we hear how Nigeria has been pumping that oil, getting that oil revenue, and we see the condition of African people in Nigeria. So, you know, we can't expect that the Congressional Black Caucus, who that historical lineage is to prevent or to protect that, whether it's the Eastern European or the Western European. That's their role, is to protect that, and they get paid for it, just like anybody else. And my friend Jay, that's what he accused me of. Tomorrow I'm going to go to work. Why? Because I'm going to get paid.
Boy. You know, Richard, last week, I guess we have about 13 more minutes left in the program. Last week, we touched on Israel was seeking to join the African Union. Mm-hmm. And the statements that Netanyahu made in Kenya in reference to the African Union, because I don't think he didn't get to address them yet.
No.
In fact, a lot of African nations, they wanted to cancel the conference because he wanted to come or be involved. But let me read a couple of the statements that he, just to reinforce, because I'm going to read another article that I posted on the Time for Awakening page. This was in reference to the article last week. It says, this is my third visit to Africa and my second to Kenya. We believe in the future of Africa. We love Africa. And I would love very much not only to cooperate on an individual basis with each of your countries, but also with the African Union. I hope that we will find a way to have Israel become an observer status in the African Union, because we can help. We can not only observe, but we can build together a better future for Africa, he added. Netanyahu spoke of Israel's desire to see Africa progress and achieve its development goals, promising his government's assistance in providing the necessary technology. He also referred to the need of cooperation in tackling terrorism. We can work together. We can defeat the barbarians. Our people deserve better lives, and we could provide that for them, said the Israeli prime minister. Now, I posted this on the website, on the Time for Awakening site. It says, 3 days after Israeli top court ruled that Africa asylum seekers can be deported to Uganda and Rwanda, but only can be held in detention for 60 days because they was held, they were just holding them there. Mm-hmm. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visited Tel Aviv neighborhoods and the area around the central bus station where many African seekers, asylum seekers, live. Police closed off the streets in the area ahead of the visit, the first such tour by Netanyahu in years. We will return South Tel Aviv to the children of Israel. We are not refugees, but they are not refugees, I'm sorry, but infiltrators looking for work, he said. He added, if needed, we will legislate an amendment to the law to change the agreements with African countries or both. Now, it says the migrants will be given $3,500 for leaving in 60 days. If they do not leave, Israeli authorities have threatened that they will start jailing them in April. So here's a guy that went down there talking about they're a friend to Africa. They want to see them progress, but they're putting Africans that have, because of wars that the United States and Israel have been involved in starting and looking for asylum, then put them in concentration camps and threaten to deport and kick them out of there. So you got Europeans again talking out of both sides of their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And the collaborators here that take money from them, I'm talking about the Black Caucus, Black leadership, that don't say nothing about it. They say nothing of these things. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing about Libya promising $90 billion to blacks to repatriate to the continent. Nothing mm-hmm. about it. The only thing mm-hmm. that leaked out about it was Libya giving money to Minister Farrakhan.
Mm-hmm. And that was early.
Nothing about any of these other countries that's offering mm-hmm. repatriation or dual mm-hmm. citizenship to people here that want to go back to the mother continent. Nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
What good is these clowns for?
Mm-hmm.
Besides running down to places like Alabama and encouraging black people to vote for the Democratic Party. That's all they're good for. To do, just like Cynthia McKinney said, to do what they're told by their masters in the Democratic Party.
And that was told to us. Cam Howard around the reparations bill?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nancy told him, like, you know, don't bring it up. And they said, don't bring it up. You know, so it's definitely, it's clear. But, you know, I still want to emphasize to the listening audience and us to look around for those transformational leaders who are developing. You know, when we had on the show, you know, the brother Obada, the sister from Baltimore, you know, these are young people who are those transformational leaders.
Yeah, right in your midst. Exactly.
Yeah, right. And they're the ones who are trying to do a lot of things as you do with Time for Awakening, a lot of things at the same time. But if we don't rally around, we don't put shields around, we haven't learned how to protect them, then their structures will not be able to grow. And then the next one has to start all over again. And that's what we'll see. That's what we see. When we even talk about, we look at what you were saying in Alabama, now the county comes out where the hookworms is, you know, the historical reference.
Mm-hmm. Lyles County.
Right. I mean, those were transformational leaders there at that time in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they organized, you know, I was looking at some, they organized politically. They didn't just fall off the plate. They were deliberately
strategically dismantled, and they were not protected. And then look at them now, close to 50 years later. You know what I mean? So we have to, our analysis has to, and our foresight and our focus, our strategic focus has to become more clear in order to, for those who want to play chess, you know, to move your pieces in that place. And therefore, I'm saying we are on the game board. We're not invisible. Our pieces may not be moving, but we are on the game board.
Yeah.
You know, and it ain't about the pieces. It's about the player who moves the pieces. So.
Moving forward, announce the lineup for next week. You know, before we do that, let me tell the listening audience about some of the things that we've been planning, because I said that you'll hear about them. I said it last month that you'll hear about them this month. Let's Buy Black 365 Connect. They were supposed to start last Monday, but they're doing something on Time for Awakening that hasn't been done before. They're going to be streaming the broadcast visually and audio. So was little snafus there with the equipment. Hopefully they'll be starting this Monday. If it's postponed again, it will be next Monday. But hopefully they'll be on this Monday, which will be 8 o'clock, 8 to 10 with Let's Buy Black 365 Connect. A couple other programs will be starting. One other program will possibly be starting this month. Connecting the Dots UK. That's called Connecting the Dots UK with Brother Paul Alagua. That'll be coming straight from the UK. You'll get to see and hear, you'll get to hear Pan-African views from brothers on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. Acres of Diamonds is another program that'll be airing out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. The program will be called Acres of Diamonds, and that's going to debut the first week in February. So we have some programs that is debuting soon. Three programs, Let's Buy Black 365 Connect, Connecting the Dots UK, and Acres of Diamonds that will be making their debuts on Time for an Awakening. Also, Time for Awakening is expanding. We'll be broadcasting live from the UK starting next program. We should have done it this week, but again, just little things that got to be worked out technically that I have to do on my end. They're prepared in the UK. So we'll be expanding our audience to brothers and sisters in the UK. The program is heard worldwide, to be honest, but it's a station in the UK that's going to pick up what we do, and they want to broadcast the program live. We'll give out that website for some of our UK listeners next week, the site where they can hear it. It'll also be broadcast on all the sites now that you hear Time for Awakening, but we'll just be pulling in another audience in the UK. And you know, we'll tell you about the site and tell you about how you can hear the program, some of our listening audience, when we welcome in our UK listeners next week. But again, Monday, the week starts out with African Perspectives with Brother Ushi, which is 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Hopefully later on Monday evening, Let's Buy Black 365 Connect will be debuting their program on Monday evening at 8 o'clock. On Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC, program 8 to 10 on Wednesday evening. On Friday, let me go back, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, African Perspectives on Time for an Awakening, which is 11 a.m. To 1 p.m. On Wednesday evening, Revive is here from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Thursday, Us Lifting Us, a Black Economic Cooperative Program, is on from 9 to 11. I'm sorry, from 9 to 11 Thursday evening. Friday evening, we're back with Time for an Awakening. Friday evening at 8 o'clock, and then Saturday morning, SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore, is on from 10 to 12 on Time for an Awakening. Other programs is lining up, so Richard, things are expanding. I'm glad to welcome in the UK audience. Next week, we'll have a number where they can call and be part of the program also, because there's different extensions that you can use to bring them in, involved in the conversation. So I'm glad they'll be joining us next week. It'll be a different flavor. Listen, you're dealing with global white supremacy, so you're going to hear some of the same issues, but it'll be a different audience talking about it.
And with expanding analysis and expanding the data.
And with a little different accent. Boy. Well, come to the end of another program, Richard. I want to thank the listening audience for being with us this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace. Driving through the country on a lazy afternoon. Or you watching your children playing after school. They seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school. If we know all we say we know about the problem. Children.
save the children. To save the children.